Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in once again. It's David Summers hosting another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. This is the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now let's step back into the ring and back into time as we get wall to wall, treetop tall, with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. Hey, Ron, listen, first thing today, I think congratulations are in order for your accomplishment of having reached another milestone in your Studcast journey. This is episode number 350. 350 Studcasts, Ron, and now you have more listeners than ever. So congratulations.
Well, thank you, Dave. I mean, it's hard to believe, man. When I started doing these things, almost 7 years ago now, these studcasts, I can't hardly believe, but they're more popular today than they've ever been. So I love my loyal listeners, man. I have some of the greatest fans in the world out there, and it's truly amazing how many fans there are out there. And this number, 350, reminds me of when so I kind of like having a great match and everybody in the building's on their feet. And it made me, when that happened, want to give them all a little bit more.
Well, of course, I understand that. Knowing you, absolutely. The fact that your audience continues to grow really speaks loudly for your listeners. They're enjoying, as you just described it, this great match that you've been giving them for years. And I remember sitting on my back porch looking out in the woods with you, and you first said, you know, I'm thinking about doing a podcast. And man, have you ever done it, and you continue to do it. You've been telling a story that no one else does in wrestling podcast, a continuing weekly ride, really absolutely like no other, a story of family, a story of the sports history, a story of how a unique business like no other on the planet absolutely worked. And by doing it a week at a time, as you are, I think you got at least another 350 more episodes ahead of you.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that'd be fine for me, actually, you know, if it happens, because I enjoy getting prepared for each one of these. It takes me back to my family's life, four generations and more than 100 years that we've been doing this in one form or another. It has something to do with wrestling. So today we're going to begin our journey, another journey, after finalizing the deal in the last Studcast to add about a couple of million people in northern Alabama as potential customers to our southeastern base down there along the Gulf Coast. I'm going to reveal some of the plans that today we're going to talk about how it's going to start to get that done. So then we ride south into the Gulf Coast and down to Mobile, Alabama for an absolutely loaded card that had a record four main events on it. We'll break down the TV show promoting it. We'll talk about the results of the matches and the attendances, and hopefully we'll have enough time then, Dave, to answer another learning tree question.
So it sounds like you and Lightning are ready, already off and running. And so tell us how are you going to take Birmingham, the largest city in Alabama that had been dead to the sport of wrestling, really, for about 2 years at the time, and make wrestling bigger there than it had ever been?
Well, it was definitely a challenge. I can say that for sure, you know, and I've not even mentioned the fact that Nick Gulas, the man we purchased it from, had probably sold the rights a year earlier in 1979 to a local promoter there. And that made things even worse because the local promoter was worse than Nick. It was so bad that it gave the local promoter, the territory was so bad, he gave it back to Nick and he walked away and didn't even ask for his money back.
Okay. I've never heard that before, Stud. All right. So did it get so bad in the late 70s after your grandfather died that Nick had already sold it once before you went to Nashville in the last Studcast and then bought it?
Yeah, basically, I think that's what he did, you know, and I only recently found out that for myself. So basically, when we purchased Birmingham in May of 1980, they had stopped running it. They weren't even running the town at that point, but they were still airing the TV show. And that show was being produced in Chattanooga, which was another one of the Gulas cities that were going to be sold in that same time frame. So they were just recording this Chattanooga show and running it in Birmingham. So we were basically starting from scratch, man, with a big city that had lost almost all of its wrestling fans. As soon as we paid Nick in mid-May of 1980, I gave him a list of things that I said, Nick, this is what's got to happen. And I told him I wanted him to introduce me to the TV station manager and to the building managers in Huntsville, Florence, and Birmingham. These were the cities in northern Alabama besides Birmingham. And I made it very clear that I didn't want him to run any city in northern Alabama ever again. So he met me in Birmingham, latter part of May, and he took me to WBMG-TV, where they had been airing their TV show, Nick's show, for years. And he introduced me to their general manager. He also introduced me to the manager of the Boutwell Auditorium, where they had been running matches on Monday nights for 30 years, maybe more. So I made him personally introduce me, saying that I was the new owner to these two general managers, which was extremely important that they hear it from his mouth. You know, after a week after those introductions, I went back to both the TV station and the Boutwell Auditorium. And basically, Dave, I made their day.
Okay, now wait, Clint Eastwood. I want to know how you made their day.
Yeah, well, you know, to the TV station manager, I took the copies of the November 1979 rating books from Arbitron and Nielsen from the Knoxville TV station.
Boom. Right? There you go.
There you go. I took the November book, from which is the big book basically for TVs, November and February. I took the November Arbitron and Nielsen. And then I took them so he could have a look at them. And I also took copies of the TV rating books for the Mobile market from May of 1978, which was the latest one. Back to February, which was the very first show we did there, started in May of 1978. I had those books from May into February of 1980, which was, basically 3 years, about 3 years earlier. So I'm going to show him Knoxville numbers. I'm going to show him what's happened in Gulf Coast since we went down there. I sat down with the general manager of the Birmingham TV station. I showed him the Knoxville ratings first. I told him the story of what had happened there after I bought it in 1974. And when he saw the 80 share in both those books for wrestling at 2 p.m. on Saturday afternoon, he was amazed. His mouth fell open. It's like, wait, I must be reading that wrong. So then I threw in another fact that really got his attention. I told him that our wrestling show in Tennessee for years had the biggest audience on Saturdays of any show from sign on until prime time, including college football.
Whoa.
And he asked if I minded him contacting somebody at the Knoxville station to verify these numbers, that they're correct. You know, so he was looking at the actual books, but he still wanted some verification. And he said he had never seen an 80 share on any show anywhere, right? So I gave the general managers the name and number of the people in Knoxville so that he could call and take care of that. So then I showed him the mobile ratings from the two books, one in 1978 and from one in 1980, almost 2 years apart, to emphasize the growth that we had experienced down there. And the first book from 1978, when we first started there, had only a 40 share. And then, but the last book in February of 1980, less than 2 years later, had a 70 share.
Wow.
So he's going, wow, 2 years you took this from a 40 share to a 70 share. And then, so I also threw in the name of the Mobile TV station's manager, who was C.P. Persons, who was one of the most famous in the country, recognized around the country as a great, great television general manager. And as I expected, he personally knew C.P., right, because he's from Birmingham. And he asked, I asked him, I said, please call C.P. He'll tell you exactly what I'm saying here, and he'll verify what you're seeing here. So he told me he had never heard of a wrestling show with those kind of numbers. And I was ready for that. So I asked him if he'd like to see what the actual show looked like. And he said, gosh, are you serious? You got one? I go, yeah. And I pulled out my briefcase and I pulled out the last 1 hour show that we had done in Dothan.
And what format was that? I mean, was it VHS back then?
It was VHS. Yes,
wow.
It was
okay.
VHS.
Okay.
VHS was just coming in, and we were putting them on VHS. I had a tape. I used to tape them in my house.
Yeah. Okay.
Our show was back in the 78, 79.
Right.
On into 80. So I pulled out a VHS. He had the equipment right there in a big conference room, and he threw it on, and so it was common knowledge that we had the best wrestling TV show in the world. I mean, within the wrestling business, it was pretty much common knowledge. And in fact, every year when we used to go to the NWA conventions, Sam Muchick, the president, he would always every year have me do a session that lasted about 2 hours and invite in any owners that wanted to see how to run a TV, right? And see what you can do that you may not be doing. And he would have me do that for him every year. So what this GM was about to see was definitely far superior to anything he'd ever seen produced by Nick Gulas, that was for sure. So we had so many things in our shows that no one else did. Beginning in 1975, went there in 74. We didn't really start to get on the big channel in Knoxville until the 1975, about May of 75. But like all of the following deals, we had stuff like we had a unique format that featured four matches per show. We had instant replays. No one had that. On the end of every match, we had an instant replay. We did split screens. Nobody did split screen shots. We had a personality profile in our show. Nobody else had. We had videos shot from live arenas. We had great commentators. Les Thatcher was wonderful there, man, and so was Phil Rainey. And when we did our commercials advertising our matches, we used a Vitaphone, which nobody was doing back in those days, where when you were calling out when Les was telling who the matches were, the names would come up on the screens for the people. So the next matches, for the arenas, that's the way we announced those. And we were doing things that nobody had ever done. So, but when we finished this, watching this, when I explained this and he got to see it, he said what he was blown away by the most, he says, I got to tell you, son, I have never seen as good a wrestler as I have seen in this show. In my life.
Wow.
He was like, wow. He was more blown away by the wrestlers than the show itself, practically.
Man, you had all the fancy production, and that's real nice, but if you got crappy wrestlers, then he's probably going to go, yeah, I'm not so sure about that. And listen, the other thing is that I noticed, I remember you telling a number of times about the Knoxville numbers, which were absolutely phenomenal. I don't recall you talking about the Mobile numbers where you peaked at a 70 share of the market at some point. That's pretty amazing. And were you by yourself? Were you a one man presentation in this?
Oh yeah, man, it was just me.
Wow. You know,
and I wanted to go geared up to get the guy on board big time. You know,
well, to me, that's an amazing presentation to the general manager of a TV station that was about to get that TV show. It had to have really absolutely blown him away. And you had to be like, pardon me while I whip this out. And you hand him that VHS and boom, that's the best calling card possible.
Oh, yeah, but I wouldn't finish, man. So I asked him, you know. I'm really saving that. I'm really saving something for him. When I finished, he asked, when could he start to air this show? He says, when can I put this on the air, you know? And I said, well, you know. He said he hoped he could put it on as soon as possible, you know. So I told him he could have probably the first one for him and on the next week, you know. So we had already paid the money cash, so, you know, I was ready to go. So he was clearly impressed, and he thanked me for bringing the new show to his station, and that kind of opened the door for me to request his giving us some free introductory 30-second spots to advertise this new wrestling show, right? And he jumped on that. He goes, well, heck yeah, I think that's a great idea. He'd just seen the product, and he was like, he was blown away. He knew this is going to crank me big time here. Wrestling's going to be big here. So then came the coup de grace, though, man. You know, so he was about to get up, and I asked if he had just a few more minutes. I said, I got something very special for you and for your station. And I told him that I had, you know, that I believed in advertising in a big way, and especially when my company came into any new markets we'd never been before. I told him, we're going to do a major billboard buy in Birmingham and the surrounding area before we opened up, and with our first live event before we opened up, which is probably going to be sometime in the fall of that year. Now we're in May, but I want to make sure we had this thing ready before we ran. I wanted to make sure we sold out our very first night. So I told him there was going to be at least 100 billboards. We're buying them from Lamar Advertising, which was the big billboard company all across the South, and biggest billboard company in the South, as a matter of fact, down in that time frame. And I wanted to see if we could include his station in the text on those billboards for free. He was like,
wow.
He said, wait, whoa, you're going to put our television station in the time that the show's on for free?
We're kidding.
You're going to give that to us?
Wow. Yeah. We can't allow that. We're not going to allow that. That's crazy. You are really absolutely making his day, as you said earlier. This almost sounds too good to be true, and I bet he was saying that too.
Well, you know, there were two things not favorable to us, though, with this station in this situation. They didn't have the biggest signal in the market, which was Channel 6, which is a monster station, biggest in Alabama, that had a signal covered most of northern Alabama. And because it had been Nick's TV show, you know, it was far from the quality production that they'd been airing for years. But it was the second problem was his show was on at a horrible time. His wrestling show was on just before midnight on Saturday. The worst time I had ever heard of a television show being aired. And it was a credit to Birmingham for being a great wrestling market, because they had drawn as well as they had when you had a show on at that time. So I didn't really like the time here, and I had already figured out how I wanted to approach that with him. So I had intentionally whetted his appetite, man, with this huge billboard buy and the fact I was including his station on it for free. And then I'd been working with Lamar Outdoor for years. I told him that. Mm-hmm. And my relationship with them goes way back into the early 70s, and using their billboards. And as soon as I knew the sale was happening, I had them the billboard company make me a copy of the billboard that we were going to be running that summer. So where the TV station's call letters were, you know, the show aired on the road. I put them on the, in the time slot of 2 o'clock on Saturdays on that billboard. I had the billboard company design it that way for me.
You know, in radio back in the day, we called those spec spots a speculation spot. This is what your commercial is going to sound like if you buy it. So that's exactly what you did. You had a picture of his billboard?
Yes. Wow. A picture of his billboard.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's brilliant, presenting him with his call letters. All right. So I can't believe you did that. That was really forward thinking. You had them design the billboard far in advance with the station's call letters, airtime for your wrestling show as 2 o'clock on Saturday rather than almost midnight where they had been running it for years. I mean, did you think you were kind of taking chances a little bit there, Ron?
Yeah, maybe a little. Right? So, you know, yeah. But what's the old saying, man? No risk, no gain.
Yes.
So,
you know, yeah.
So I asked if he'd like to see a copy of what the billboard looked like. Now, he'd already seen the show. I said, well, you'd like to see a copy of what the billboard's going to look like. And he was like, oh, God, yeah, you got that? And I said, yeah, I handed it to him, right? So he glanced at the billboard, and he paused for a little bit, probably because he noticed that airtime, 2 o'clock on Saturday.
Right? Hello.
Nobody had mentioned that. I hadn't mentioned that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I kind of had already blown him away pretty good, right? So he finally smiled at me, and he said, you know, he says, Ron, this entire meeting has been really enlightening because everything you've offered us here is really different. He goes, you know, and if you're willing to do all this for us, he says, I think we could do you a big favor in return. And I think we could put your show on at 2 o'clock on Saturdays.
Wow. I mean, I can't see how the wrestling organization, as you talked about earlier, but before you, even thought they were going to have any sort of success at 11 p.m. on a Saturday. I mean, that was really a gutsy move, Ron. So what were you going to do if he questioned you about it?
Well, I was going to act as if I didn't notice that they put that time, that they changed the time
oops,
on the billboard.
Oops.
You know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the fact that it was there, it at least opened the door to a discussion if he hadn't just gone right ahead and said, oh, we're going to do this. You know, it might have given me an opportunity to talk about the 2 o'clock time slot. But, man, I have to admit the whole meeting went with much better than I ever thought it was going to go with him.
Okay, without a doubt, you definitely made that TV station's that general manager's day. So how did you do with the Boutwell Auditorium manager?
Well, I had talked already to the Knoxville Coliseum manager and the Mobile Auditorium Complex manager about buying Birmingham. We're going to go into Birmingham. We're going to open it up as another market. And ask if they would mind vouching for the success that we'd had there if they got a call about it, you know, with our wrestling crowds, you know. So when I visited the Boutwell people at the Boutwell Auditorium, I left a name and phone number for both building managers, the guy in Knoxville, the guy in Mobile. And these building managers, they talked to each other quite a bit all the time. They were in the same business. And I know it made the Boutwell Auditorium manager's day when he heard that we held the all-time record crowd for a sporting event in the Knoxville Coliseum. Never had it been bigger. And in his 30-year history, it was the biggest crowd for any sporting event was for wrestling. And then when I talked about drawing 10,000 fans in Mobile in their building, mm-hmm. He was like, his eyes were kind of big, like, whoa, are you kidding me? You know, So it's, you know, especially when they had been doing only a few hundred people in Birmingham, right? Now I'm talking, well, we drew 10,000 a couple of weeks ago in Mobile.
Right.
So it's like, wow. He's like, gosh almighty, who am I talking to here, basically?
Yeah, really. In a smaller market, Birmingham being the largest in the state of Alabama. Hey, listen, this has been a real eye-opening, way more than a hidden history lesson today. This has been a business lesson also. Finding out what was necessary to get done once a sale was made. I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more about Birmingham in the future. I'm looking forward to seeing how successful you were in Birmingham. So before we take our break, set us up for the card in Mobile. Let's go back to Tuesday, May 13th, 1980. Take us back in time.
Well, man, this is a heck of a card, Dave. We didn't advertise it as such, but this was a quadruple main event. This is actually four main events. So the opening match was Charlie Cook against Bill Dromo. Eddie Boulder was facing off against Norvell Austin. And then the first of four, of which any of these four could have been the last match on the card, basically it was this kind of card, was a Southeastern Championship match with a new champion, Mongolian Stomper, managed by the Big C. And he was going to be defending against the biggest star in the history of Georgia, Mr. Wrestling Number Two. And Mr. Wrestling Number Two was not just known in Georgia. He was such a big star. He was known across the South. So we're bringing in Wrestling Two to wrestle Stomper, which is going to be the third match on the card.
Wow.
So, and then in the first ever three-man United States Junior Heavyweight Championship match, the present champion, Tony Charles, was going to be defending against both Don Fargo and Dick Steinborn. These were three guys in this match. The rules were the first man to beat both of his opponents back-to-back is going to be the United States Junior Heavyweight Champion. So then we had a Southeastern Tag Title match with me and Rob, new champions. We just won the belts the week before. We're going to be defending against Dr. Bill Irwin and Randy Rose this time, managed by Big C. Last match was a special challenge match from Bob Armstrong. After he lost his Southeastern belt the week before because of outside interference from Ron Bass, he was going to be wrestling Ron Bass, managed by Big C.
Wow, that is one great card, and it truly has four main events. To me, it's amazing. You got the gigantic Mongolian Stomper in like the third match. That's crazy. All right, so we will get into the TV show. I think that's going to be coming up that promoted this huge card right after the break when we come back. This Studcast is on a roll, and it continues in a moment. Okay, Studcast fans, if you've never listened to a Super Studcast, you are missing out on real wrestling history. Ron has 43 of them on his website, tnstud.com. Just click Super Studcast and take your pick. Each is about 3 hours, with some of the best wrestlers in the world live, and others filled with stories from the stud, one of the great storytellers of all time, about wrestlers of the past. These Super Studcasts are only $2.99, less than $1 per hour, for almost 3 hours of fantastic entertainment. Saddle up now, sit back, and ride into history. It's the best deal in wrestling. All right, Studcast fans, welcome back in. Another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, episode number 350. It's called Owner's Job, Bob and Bass Go at It. So 350 of these. All right, Ron, as we get back into the story, we've been having some really great TV shows for several weeks in a row. So tell us about this one. Set this one up for us.
Well, this was one of the best, man, from beginning to end. It opened with Charlie Pratt at the set. He announced the championship match was going to be on this TV show. We were having a championship match each week during the month of May because it's rating period. And he told them who this TV match is going to be going for the Southeastern TV trophy, the TV champion, the Mongolian Stomper. And the Stomper hadn't actually defended that TV trophy for about 2 months since he'd won it from Joe LaDuke on television about 2 months earlier. So then Charlie talked about the personal insult from the Big C last week, and he refused to open the show with him today. And and he had them pre-record Big C's comments about today's TV trophy match, right? That's what's coming up. When I talked to Charlie about it, he was like, Ron, you know, he's still upset with what Carson had said, Big C had said. So Charlie asked the director then, you know, he said, let's pre-record it, Ron. So I agreed. I said, okay, we'll have the director pre-recorded, and then you can just call it up when you get ready for it. So when he got ready to show it, Big C was there with the Mongolian Stomper. Stomper was wearing his Southeastern belt, and he was carrying the TV trophy, which is a pretty big trophy, man. So Big C was upset with two things, big time, you know. One, it was that Charlie Platt was still mad about a little something, as Big C said, about a little something I said last week, you know. He said, but it really doesn't concern me, you know. And he says, what's really upsetting me today is, he said, my Stomper's defending his TV trophy. And at the end of the show, he goes, but nobody has told me who he's defending it against. You know, how can I have my man defend his title and he don't even know he's wrestling yet? You know, and he said, I already had him ask Charlie Platt, and he won't say anything, right? So he had a little beef right there off the top. So Charlie asked the director in the middle of it, he said, to cut him off, right? And then in the mid sentence, basically, And the cameras come back to the set, and Rob and I had joined Charlie during the little deal with the Big C, and he congratulated us for winning back our Southeastern tag belts, and they were sitting on the desk in front of us, and the TV audience congratulated us. A lot of them weren't aware that we had won them at this point, and with a big cheer. And then so Charlie said he was very pleased to see the video that we're about to watch, where the Big C cost his Southeastern tag champions, Ron Bass and Dr. Bill Irwin, their belts. And he said he hoped the Big C was going to lose another championship on the end of this show when the Stomper's defending his TV trophy against an unknown opponent, the way he described his opponent. So we asked Charlie, both Rob and I, you know, we said, do you mean you haven't told the Big C who the Stomper's wrestling for the trophy? And Charlie said, no, he goes, and I'm not speaking to him either, right? So he said, I just wanted to show fans what an idiot the Big C was. And, you know, he asked the director then to run the tag match, right? So it opened with me in a full nuss, and Bill Irwin had me nussed up. Rob and the referee was on the other side of the ring with Bass, and Big C jumped up there, he loaded his glove, and when he threw a punch at me, I ducked, and he hit Irwin, and he knocked him out, actually, and so I covered him. The referee counted him out, and he raised our hands, he presented us with the belts again, the studio audience cheered as if it just happened, and basically, so did Charlie, practically, like, oh boy, look at that, like, I love that. And then, so Charlie couldn't wait to say, you know, he says, the fumbling and bumbling Big C, he said, he cost his team their belts. And that after they only held them for 2 weeks, he said. And they said, now Big C has got a new team going after them. And next week, you guys are going to be wrestling Dr. Bill Irwin and Randy Rose.
Okay, so how about the first TV match? Who was in that?
Well, it was that new team that I just mentioned. Charlie, you know, said it's going to be Dr. Bill Irwin and Randy Rose. And so we stayed at the set with Charlie to watch this new team. And when Big C brought him out of the dressing room, they all three, instead of getting in the ring, they started over toward the set. And the Big C got about halfway there. Now, me and Rob are sitting there with Charlie. He's not going to come and grab Charlie with us sitting there. So Big C kind of demanded, you know, screamed real loud, you know, who is the Stomper wrestling? I want to know who my man is wrestling on the end of this show. Well, Charlie ignored him. He only pointed at him, saying, you need to go in there, get in the ring. So Rob and I cracked up. Charlie was really enjoying the Big C concern about who the Stomper was wrestling on the end of the show. And we didn't mind playing along with it. Okay, super. Well, let's keep him in suspense. So this new team, once they got started, became a little concerned. Boy, I tell you, Irwin and Rose made a good team. So Rob and I watched a little. We were like, geez, man. Basically, these were two up-and-coming young stars, man. And they were punishing their opponents through this match. And they were very convincing, is a good way to put it. And they got themselves a quick win. So Bob Armstrong joined Charlie at the set in the second segment. And he watched the video of Ron Bass and how Bass had cost him the Southeastern Championship. And the video began with this tremendous collision between Bob and the Stomper, was wrestling against the Stomper, and they both collided head first. And then the Stomper went backwards into the referee, and the referee took the worst part of the blow. And so the Big C, the Big C comes into the ring. He loaded his glove. He's going to finish Bob off. Bob was kind of struggling to get to his feet. Stomper's still laying there, and the referee's laying on his face. He's not going. He's not moving. So Big C, he got his glove on, and Bob was getting up, and Big C took a swing at him, and Bob ducked it, and he put a whipping on the Big C. He pulled the Big C's glove off, and he was putting it on his own hand. And while he's putting the glove on his hand, Ron Bass comes from the back of the building, and he entered the ring behind Bob's back. Bob never saw him coming. The big old Bass had this bull rope, and they had that cowbell attached to it. So he took that cowbell, he nailed Bob in the back of the head with that cowbell, and he knocked Bob out. Bob went down face first, and Bass then rolled him over. He pulled the Stomper over, put the Stomper on top of Bob. He picked up Big C's glove. He drug Big C over the apron. He picked him up and threw him over his shoulder, and he ran back to the dressing room with Big C over his shoulder. The referee finally got up. Stomper's laying on top of Bob. He counted him out, counted Bob out. He gave the belt to the Stomper, and Bob got carried back to the dressing room. So Bob said, that was the end of the video. He said he's going to get his belt back, but he says right now, he goes, I want Ron Bass. He's the one that cost me my belt. And he said, I want to thank Don Curtis. He said he listened to what happened here. Then he saw the video, and he gave me the match with Ron Bass. So I'm going to be wrestling Ron Bass. And he goes, now that the Big C got two big men to contend with, the Stomper and Ron Bass, he goes, I'm going to take care of Bass first, and then I'm going to get my belt back from the Stomper. So the studio audience gave him a big cheer as he left the set.
All right, so let's go to the second match. Set that one up for us.
Well, the big man they had just watched, Ron Bass, it was his turn. So Bass went into the ring, and he had, I think this was maybe only his second time on TV. So the Big C was with him. He was going to be managing him. And he watched Bob leave the set. When Bob left the set and headed for the dressing room, the Big C started to cross the studio toward where Charlie was, screaming the same thing he had at the first match, who's wrestling my Stomper? And so Charlie didn't take any chances. He just got up and left the set. And the ring announcer was basically introducing Bass for the match. And so at that point, the bell basically rang. And and the Big C gave up, and, he returned to the dressing room. He saw that Charlie wasn't going to come back. He's not going to get an answer, so he went to the dressing room. Charlie came back to the set, right? Just about the time that Ron Bass, it didn't take Bass 3 minutes, 4 minutes match. Wow, he hefted his opponent up over his shoulder, kind of like he carried Big C back to the dressing room running. And he charged across the ring. He drove that guy, man, upside down. He had him upside down, drove him into the turnbuckles. Then he didn't even slam him. He just turned around and he charged back across the ring and he dived in the air on top of him, man. It was what I called a Texas Stampede. I don't know what Bass's name for it was, but there wasn't a doubt that that match was over. I mean, it was like, wow, this didn't last long.
Kind of like dropping an automobile on a person. Great way to start this one, I'll tell you that. All right, the personality profile. Let's go there.
Well, this was a totally different group on this profile. Charlie was going to try to talk to all three of the wrestlers that were in this upcoming United States Junior Championship three-man match, right? And it was a new type of match that had never been done before.
Okay. Do you mean you had never seen or heard of this kind of match before? What do you mean by that?
And yeah, nobody had. I mean, you know, I kind of thought, you know, and we had three of the best. When I sat and talked about it, me and Robin thought about it, we had three of the best junior heavyweight wrestlers in the world in our territory. You had Tony Charles, you had Dick Steinborn, you had Don Fargo. Now, each of them had different skills, and they competed against each other for the same championship. They had been wrestling against each other for about 3 weeks. But they've been trading off which guys are wrestling against who, and the three of them had basically been battling for Tony Charles's belt. So I came up with an idea that allowed all three of them to go for the belt in one match at the same time. So Charlie had all three of them sitting with him on the profile set and at the same time, and they were going to watch a video from the week before of the championship match between Tony Charles, and he was wrestling this time, Dick Steinborn. Both of those two were sitting there with him. They had patches on their foreheads, compliments of the third wrestler sitting there with him, Don Fargo. So they watched the reason that they had the patches on their foreheads because, they started... before they started discussing the three-man championship match, they watched what happened with Don Fargo. And Charlie had each man then sitting at his seat where he thought he could control them the best he could. And Don Fargo, he had sitting on his left, and he had Tony Charles right next to him on the right, and beyond Tony was Dick Steinborn. And so Charlie began with a commitment from all three of them that there's going to be no fighting here. There's going to be no fisticuffs, and he says, if anything happens here and I don't feel comfortable with it, I'm going to end this profile immediately. So I want you guys to be gentlemen. So Charlie explained the rules for the first ever. And basically the video had shown, that Fargo had gone in the ring on these two guys and busted both of them open when he wasn't supposed to be in the match. So it was a three. He said, this is going to be a three-man match. It's going to be no disqualification. It's going to be no time limit. We're going to have each guy will have a chair sitting in the corner of the ring. Two of you will be in the ring at once. The other one will be sitting on his chair. And he said the champion, Tony Charles, is going to start the match in the first fall. And then we're going to flip a coin to see which of the other two of you are going to be in that first fall with Tony Charles. He said, then the winner of that fall is going to wrestle the third man in the match in the second fall. And as each new man, enters the ring, he's going to do so at the bell. When the bell rings in a fall, that you don't have to sit there and wait. You can storm into the ring as fast as you can get there.
Wow.
So he said the first man that's going to beat both of these opponents in this back-to-back match, can beat him back-to-back, he's going to be the next United States Junior Heavyweight Champion.
Sounds like a really interesting format, an unusual kind of match. So how did the profile go? How did everybody sit during the profile?
Well, the video rolled, and like I said, it showed Charles and Steinborn going at it for the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship. This was about 3 or 4 days earlier than the television show. And they were having a pretty legal match. I mean, Steinborn was not a crazy heel like Fargo was. He didn't mind breaking the rules every once in a while, but he was a totally different type of guy. And he had real wrestling skills. So then in the middle of all this, as this is going on, from out of nowhere, here comes Don Fargo. He enters the ring. He's got his fist taped. And he instantly gets the match stopped. He attacked both wrestlers. And he busted both of them open, left them bleeding, and got out of the ring and went back to the dressing room. Right? So Charlie asked him an obvious question. He goes, well, why did you do that? Right? So Fargo, being the nut he was, you know, he told everyone it was because, he says, I'm the best junior heavyweight in the world. And I've been denied a return match for the title since the first time I got a shot at this guy's belt 3 weeks ago. And he says, the reason for that is, he says, because, he said, I busted him. I busted. And then he pointed at Tony Charles. He said, I busted the little limey's eye. Well, wow. When he said the word limey, man, that's an extremely derogatory expression, man.
Right.
For an Englishman. Right?
Yeah.
And Fargo knew it. Right. And Tony jumped out of his chair and he started for Fargo. Right. And Charlie got between him. Right. Wait a minute. You know, I've talked to you about this. So he's trying to get him back into control. He reminded him that, you know, that this profile is going to end unless you guys can stay calm and politely talk about this. So Tony sat back down. But he reminded everyone that he had won that match. And this, he said, pointing at the bandaged head, at his own bandaged head, he says, this is the second time that Fargo has busted me open in 3 weeks, and I've only wrestled him once. Right? So, how could he busted me twice, and I only had one match with him, right? So Fargo had a little laugh at that. He kind of went, I giggled a little bit. So Steinborn then got involved, and he shouted, you know, I've been here for 3 weeks. And he goes, I've only had one chance at the belt. And he said, and it was in that video that you just watched. And he goes, look at me. And he had a busted place, too. He said, he busted my eye here. And he says, this is the second time Fargo has busted my eye, and I've only been in the ring with him once. So what's going on here, basically, like what is he getting away with? Well, that's all it took, man. Fargo and Steinborn, man, they both jumped up and they got in each other's face. And and Charles got up too, you know. So he kind of knew, Charlie, that this is it, man. I'm not going to get this one stopped. So he asked the director, he said, go to commercial, go to black. Right, so,
wow.
And they went to black, but they still got into a little fisticuffs there while the commercial was going on.
I tell you, these personality profiles lately have really been awesome. It's so much fun for you to take us back in time like that. These three guys needed some kind of special match to resolve their issues. So how about the next TV match?
Well, it was a real surprise for fans, man. A wrestler that had become a star, like I mentioned earlier, all across the southern United States, because Georgia had that television that was so strong, and he was out of Atlanta. And so we had gotten this guy from Jim Barnett for an entire week. He sent him to us on this Saturday TV show, and he's going to be with us all week through the next Friday. And I'm talking about Mr. Wrestling 2. And so nobody knew, nobody had mentioned him, and nobody had seen him on that TV. I don't know at this point if he had ever been on that TV in Dothan. So the next match, the studio crowd exploded, man, because he came out of the dressing room, Mr. Wrestling, and went straight to the set with Charlie. The fans just went nuts, like, hey, that's Mr. Wrestling, right? And he says, I'm going to tell everybody I'm here for a week. He goes, I'm here for one thing. I'm going to take the Mongolian Stomper Southeastern Championship belt, and I'm going back to Georgia with it. So the studio was extremely excited to see him, like I said. And boy, he didn't let fans down. He went in and hit his opponent with that running knee lift that he was famous for. wow, I sent him halfway across the ring. And, you know, so he had won a whole lot of belts with that move right there. And he came looking to get him a new one.
I tell you what, this was turning into one terrific TV show, and you still had the TV Trophy Championship match still to come. All right, so but had the Big C found out who his stomper was going to be facing for that upcoming TV Trophy match, had that been revealed yet?
No, he still didn't know, you know. And so the Big C Bass and the Mongolian Stomper, they were on the next interview. So naturally, Charlie wasn't going to sit there and do the interview with him. So he left the set before they got to the set. And when they started over from the dressing room, Big C was extremely upset, still unaware of Stomper's opponent was for the deal. And, you know, and now he was just finding out. Now he's more upset than ever because he had no idea that his champion's going to be wrestling Mr. Wrestling too for a week in cities, right? So when, you know, that didn't go exactly like Big C wanted it. And so when the bell rang to start the TV Trophy match, which the Stomper, you know, came out of the dressing room. He was at that point wearing his Southeastern belt. He was carrying his TV Trophy into the ring. And Big C kind of pushed him aside, almost out of control, screaming still, you know, who's his opponent? Who's he wrestling here, right? So it turned out, man, his opponent didn't need any introduction. Bob Armstrong came flying out of that dressing room door and shot it straight into the ring like a buzzsaw. Bell was rang, and the Big C, he fell on his face in the floor through the ropes. He was like, oh, my God, what are we what's he doing here, right? So the studio crowd went crazy. So did the Stomper. Stomper was like, wow, what'd I do, you know? And so the studio fans, they got so wild that a lot of them got up and left the bleachers. They came to the edge of the ring because it sat right there, and the studio was small. And they were kind of surrounding the apron. It was total pandemonium. Bob was just pummeling with the Stomper with punches. And the Stomper couldn't escape the ring because the fans were surrounding the ring. So the first time, you know, he went down, Armstrong covered him for the pin. And the building exploded. Big C and the Stomper, they retreated to the dressing room, and Bob got the TV Trophy. And instead of going to the set or going back to the dressing room, he went up into the bleachers again, man, with his TV Trophy to celebrate with the fans.
I tell you, that had to be one of the best TV shows yet. So what did Charlie say was going to be the championship match on the next TV show, because he always did a great job promoting what's coming up next week?
Well, when we were in these rating periods like this, we always wanted them to know what was coming next, what title was coming next. And the next week, we were going to have the United States Junior Heavyweight Champion, who won this three-man match, defend his title on television. So that was going to be the match for the next one.
All right. All right, so let's go to Mobile. Take us to Mobile, Alabama, Tuesday, May 13th, 1980.
Okay, so we're going to run down the winners of this card, matches on the card. Charlie Cook got a win over Bill Dromo. Norvell Austin got a win over Eddie Boulder. Then in the first of the four main events for the Southeastern Championship, the Mongolian Stomper, managed by Big C, won the match convincingly with Mr. Wrestling 2. In fact, they had to help Wrestling 2 back to the dressing room. So he was prepared this time for it. Stomper looked like a champion. The next match was that United States Junior Heavyweight three-man championship match. And wow, it was a great match. Me and Rob watched it. It went more than 30 minutes. It had 12 falls in it. And all kinds of different scenarios of guys getting out and guys going in the ring really fast, trying to get the second win real quick. And the longer it went, the more the fans got into the match. And it was just amazing thing. And Tony Charles came away again with the belt and maybe as an even stronger champion. His two opponents were even more angry at the end of this match with each other than they were at with Tony Charles, and then they were going to be coming back the next week against each other, Steinborn against Fargo in a brass knucks match. So the next match was the Southeastern tag match with Rob and I against the Big C's new team, Dr. Bill Irwin, Randy Rose, and this one ended in a disqualification. The Big C had to get his team saved from getting beat by getting himself disqualified. It was about the way Big C handled most of his managerial things. Mm-hmm. So the last match was between Bob Armstrong and Ron Bass, managed by Big C. It was the first time these two guys had met since Bass helped the Stomper win Bob Armstrong's Southeastern belt. It ended in a disqualification again. This was due to the Big C's interference, just like the match before. So Big C interfered in the tag match, caused his team to lose by disqualification, and he interfered in this one to keep his boy from getting beat.
All right, so it really sounds like another great night of wrestling with basically four main events, and you were kind of popular for that. Your shows were always big that way. How about the attendances for this week in Southeastern that had to be really big?
Crowds were big everywhere that week. Montgomery was 4,500 people. It's up from 4,300. Dothan was 47 and up from 46. Mobile was back to another sellout, 5,600. We had 2 weeks just below sellouts. So that was 14,800 fans in those three cities alone.
That was right at 15,000 fans in three nights, literally about 5,000 average per night for those three cities. I tell you, this has been an excellent 350th Studcast. I'm sorry to say we don't have enough time for a learning tree question this week, but hopefully next week we will. I thought the first part of this one was really interesting, something you rarely discuss, the handling of TV stations and buildings. I find that especially fascinating. So let's talk about next week. Where are we going to ride next week, Stud?
Well, I'm going to be discussing how we as wrestling company owners tried to work together to swap talent and help each other occasionally. And who of among those promoters around the country did that type of thing, cooperated with each other, and who didn't. And in fact, we've had a prime example here. We've got one guy from Georgia on this 350th Studcast here. That's a prime example of how we got along with the territory of Georgia as an example. So, and then next week, we're going to have help again, and it's going to come from the territory on the opposite side of us, out the west of us, Bill Watts Mid-South territory. And we're going to be in that 10,000 seat Mobile main arena again, man. So I wanted to find us something really big that's going to try to fill that sucker up. We were going to send, Bill Watts was going to send us his fantastic star, man, that I'd discovered, and we had discovered him earlier in Knoxville, years earlier. Mm-hmm. And I sent him to Bill Watts saying, "This guy, Bill, I think has the ability to be a huge star." The guy's name was, for us, he was Sylvester Ritter. Mm-hmm. But when Bill Watts got him, they changed his name to the Junkyard Dog.
Yeah.
So we're going to have the Junkyard Dog against a Mongolian Stomper as one of the matches in Mobile and Montgomery that next week.
Wow.
So don't miss this next Studcast. I'll tell you, it's going to be a tremendous card.
Already can't wait. Hey, folks, you know the deal. It's easy to get up with Ron. Facebook, you find Ron at Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. Like and follow in there. Automatically become friends with a living legend. Twitter or X, same thing. Ron Fuller Welch, follow him there also. All the posts on Twitter and Facebook are basically the same. And so if you work on one or the other, it's so easy to get up with our man, the stud. Check out his fantastic website, tnstud.com. This studcast is going to be there within hours, literally. It should be there now with every studcast ever done. Shop his stud store where you can get 43 super studcast, 4 different 8x10 photos, his thrilling lion novel, Brutus, personally autographed to you, and t-shirts still on sale for only $15.99, all with free shipping. Subscribe to Ron's YouTube channel, Southeastern Rewind. So easy to find when you go to YouTube. In the search bar, put in Southeastern Rewind. It's the first thing that pops up. Find hundreds of hours of classic old school wrestling entertainment. The last 129 studcast, 16 Ask the Stud shows, and 115 short rides with the stud. Go back 1 year or more and discover fantastic stud stories about worldwide stars. 23 studcast archive stories, 23 Tell Me More fan question and answer shows, superstars of the past shows, and much more. That's YouTube Southeastern Rewind, the best deal in wrestling. Any last comments, Ron?
Well, I want to thank everyone that listened to this studcast, and I want to thank you all for inviting me into your life and your homes and allowing me to entertain you for a short while every week. And please take care of yourselves and others. And may God bless us all.
I have so many people tell me how much they enjoy these studcasts riding down the road or even sitting at home. For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud, LLC.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic studcast. The true story continues next week. So full Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
1, 2, 3.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.